A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 56. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Prisoner. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England.
The Prisoner was a spy series and also was science fiction and conspiracy thriller type series from the late 60s, from 1967. It has a huge following and was very influential and very well remembered.
And as we discussed before, the setup of the show was an unnamed spy who attempts to resign and finds himself a prisoner on a mysterious island in a place called The Village, where nobody has names, everybody has numbers. He is referred to as number 6, and the sinister number 2 attempts to get information from him and to find out what he knows and to break his spirit in order to get the information that they want from him. But number 6 resists and he fights back. He battles with number 2. They have psychological battles. He attempts to escape. And also he tries to find out who could possibly be the mysterious number 1. The assumption that there must be a number 1 above number 2. One of the elements of the show that the prisoner tries to find out.
That's right. We talked about last time how there is a new number 2 in almost every episode. There are a couple of them that repeat, but generally, each time it's the new number 2, the previous one being replaced, presumably because, or possibly because, he failed in breaking number 6 and getting information from number 6. So we have this question. There's always a new number 2. So who is number 1? Who is number 2 working for? Number 6 is always trying to find this out. And this is part of this opening sequence that also we talked about last time, where you have the same opening sequence that explains how number 6 got there and the sort of psychological battle between number 6 and number 2. And each time you have the same conversation with number 6 and a different number 2 with a different actor. And there's always, who is number 1? And there's no answer.
That's right.
So there's some interesting sort of complicated and convoluted stuff here. It's quite vague and kind of surreal. Getting into the production side of things, The Prisoner was created by Patrick McGoohan and George Markstein. Patrick McGoohan starred in The Prisoner as number 6. He was the only actor who was in every episode. And he was a major part of the process of creating the series and a major part of how it turned out to be how it was. McGoohan had appeared as John Drake in a long-running series called Danger Man, which was also known as Secret Agent in the U.S., and it was called Destination Danger or John Drake in some markets. Markstein had been the script editor on Danger Man, and the two of them got together and decided that the idea of, well, you have a spy, well, what happens after he's a spy, after he resigns? And this is what turned into The Prisoner.
That's right, yes. I mean, it's a very interesting premise that they came up with. And as you say, this long-running and extremely successful series, Danger Man, which I think ran for over 50 episodes, Brian. And it certainly made Patrick McGoohan very popular on television. I think he used the success from that to get this show, The Prisoner, started.
Yes, Danger Man was quite a big one, for sure.
Yeah, and of course, one of the long-running mysteries of The Prisoner is the possibility that The Prisoner may in fact be John Drake, the character from Danger Man. Although, of course, as we know, he's never named. And I think when Patrick McGoohan was asked about that, Brian,
Patrick McGoohan said that The Prisoner was not John Drake, but there are others and other people who are involved with the series who have said, well, The Prisoner is John Drake, or The Prisoner may be John Drake. it certainly wasn't an official spinoff of Danger Man, but there was definitely that suggestion that, well, maybe it is the same, the same guy.
Lots of theories and speculation about that. And as you say, they, Patrick McGoohan and George Markstein came up with this sort of idea for The Prisoner. And in part, they had some, they'd based it on some stories that they'd heard from World War II about spies who'd been taken prisoner and kept in strange resort-like prisons. And in particular, there was also one well-known episode, which actually happened after the war, where a group of German atomic scientists were kept in a very comfortable English house, which was bugged so that they could record all the conversations and the intelligence services could try and find out precisely how much information the German scientists had about the atomic bomb. And that was called Project Epsilon, I believe, or Operation Epsilon. It actually happened. And I think there was also one episode of Danger Man where something similar happened, where Drake had to infiltrate a European, Eastern European spy school and found that it was actually set up to recreate an idyllic English village where various people could never leave. So, I mean, I think he got some of the ideas for The Prisoner from that as well.
Yes, there were definite connections between The Prisoner and Danger Man. There was also one episode of The Prisoner where they did like a spy story, and it was done in a style as if to be almost a satire of Danger Man. And apparently it was based on an unused script that they were going to use for Danger Man. So they sort of came back to that and had an actor who played a character called Potter in Danger Man show up briefly in The Prisoner playing a character called Potter. So they sort of had that little connection there as well.
And to pitch the show, Patrick McGoohan, I think banking on the success that he'd achieved with Danger Man, pitched the idea for The Prisoner to Lou Grade, who was the sort of head of the ITV network in the 1960s, a very larger-than-life character who we've mentioned briefly before in relationship to UFO, and we talked about UFO, which he also sort of gave the green light to. And Lou Grade sort of gave the go-ahead to McGoohan.
And McGoohan wrote extensive notes for the production team, and he wrote a number of episodes himself. He directed some episodes himself. In some cases, McGoohan actually wrote under pseudonyms so it didn't look like he was doing too much. He also, some of the time, actually fired the directors because he didn't like what they were doing and took over and directed himself. So he was, well, in some cases, not very good to work with on this particular series. But McGoohan had a great deal of creative control of The Prisoner, and a great deal of it came down to his ideas and what he was doing with it. And that was part of what made it such a unique and unusual series, was all of the things that he was doing with it and where he wanted to go with it. McGoohan originally intended only 7 episodes for The Prisoner, and he sort of had a plan of how these 7 episodes would work. And Lou Grade wanted a full 26 episodes, because for selling things overseas, that works very well. People can do reruns and go a whole year showing every episode twice. That was where Lou Grade wanted to go, was 26 episodes, and they compromised and ended up doing 17 episodes.
And they shot those 17 episodes, as we said in the last episode, they shot them in this village of Port Mirion in North Wales, and they went there for the exterior shots in September 1966, and then they had to go back again for more exterior shooting in March of 67. And then in between that, I think they were working in the studios at the quite sort of large, prestigious MGM Boreham Wood Studios, which is where they did all the interior work.
Apparently, they were actually doing The Prisoner at Boreham Wood at the same time in the next studio. 2001, A Space Odyssey was being filmed.
I did not know that. Fascinating.
Apparently, that's what they were doing. As it turned out, the Hugo Award for Dramatic Presentation, they didn't have the separate short form and long form at that point. The Prisoner, or one of the episodes of The Prisoner, was nominated for that, and 2001 A Space Odyssey won it.
Which was filming next door at the same time.
Apparently so.
Now, I also read on the BBC's website about The Prisoner that they had £75,000 per episode as a production budget, which for 1967 was quite a startling amount of money. And I think, you know, shows why The Prisoner looks so good and why the design of it is so fantastic and it's aged so well.
Yes, well, it was certainly a higher budget thing for having to go all the way out to Port Marion in Wales.
Yeah.
Most of the, certainly BBC productions, but these ITV and ITC productions as well, would sort of be filmed within an hour's drive of London and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the American broadcast was in 68 and 69, I believe. And it was a quite high-profile broadcast for a British show.
Okay. And as we've encountered before, because this was an ITV show, we have some variance in the screening order. And in the United Kingdom, the ITV network at the time was split up into different smaller channels. And they had a certain amount of control as to which order they showed episodes in and at what times. And we get this strange thing that we've encountered before with long-running shows where they would vary the running order. Never quite worked out why that was.
Yes. In this case, for The Prisoner, there is something that we have referred to as the original ITC broadcast order. And I don't know exactly where that order came from which set of broadcasts from the UK. But if you look on Wikipedia, they have a total of five different potential orders suggested, which are different things that different people have suggested for orders for how you should watch The Prisoner. One of these orders was adopted by the DVDs, and they gave you detailed descriptions about why each episode was in the particular order. There is also Patrick McGowan's suggested order, including only the seven episodes that he originally planned for The Prisoner, not including the other 10 episodes.
Because, yes, we should say, most of the episodes are, in a sense, they're standalone stories. So, apart from a few exceptions, there aren't episodes which run straight on from one into another with a continuing story, although obviously the themes of The Prisoner crop up in nearly all the episodes.
Yes, you do have the exceptions that the first episode, Arrival, is definitely first, and it's first in every order. And likewise, the last two episodes, Once Upon a Time and Fallout, are always the last two episodes.
Yeah.
So those are agreed on. Everything else in the middle varies greatly.
That's right. Three episodes are fixed, and the other ones in between, it's a bit of a muddle as to which order you watch them in.
Where am I?
In the village.
What do you want?
Information.
Whose side are you on?
That would be telling. We want information. Information.
You won't get it.
By hook or by crook, we will.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
That's right. So shall we talk about the themes in The Prisoner?
Absolutely, and there's so many.
There are a lot of different themes in The Prisoner. One of the key ones was the idea of the individual versus the group or the society. Does the individual take precedence and be an individual with his own choices, doing his own things, or does the society make decisions for everyone and everyone has to fit neatly into that? And this was number six versus the village and number six versus number two. And there is the famous quote in the repeated intro that comes in almost every episode, "I am not a number, I am a free man." And this is number six saying he's not a number, where, of course, we only know him as number six. And almost every character we know only as a number. So that is a sign as to the idea of losing your identity in society versus being an individual.
And number six is almost battling against the group for us, in a way. He's sort of battling for individuality almost on our behalf, it seems, at times.
And it's not always clear that number six is right and everyone else is wrong. It's sometimes maybe number six isn't necessarily right. So you do have a bit of ambiguity there.
Another big theme is the monitored society, is monitoring and observation and spying. Because in the village, pretty much everything is observed all the time. And I think we get the idea quite early on in the series that number six is being watched and he's being bugged. And we've mentioned this underground control room with characters on futuristic seats and control panels spinning around and watching the goings-on in the village. And on some of his repeated escape attempts, we know that he's been watched the whole time. And so, again, we get this theme of... it's a very sort of like George Orwell, really. It's a very sort of 1984 theme of people being spied upon and watched the whole time. And as we've said, the actual catchphrase of the village, "be seeing you," with this sort of salute they make where they put the finger and thumb in a circle over one eye, really has this sort of double meaning of, you know, we will be seeing you because we're watching everything you do on our television monitors.
Yes. And you find out pretty early that number six knows that he's being watched. And he will sometimes say things that are directed at whomever is watching.
And then on top of that, we've got some classic 60s science fiction themes. Again, we've brought them up many times before. We've got mind control. We've got the use of computers to predict what people will do and to analyze sort of social elements, which we've seen several times. And it all comes up. We've got brainwashing and psychedelic moments. Lots of stuff going on in The Prisoner about some of these themes, which are very common in science fiction.
Yes, that's right. It certainly does deal with a lot of those things. And you also get very strong ideas about knowledge is power, and the idea that number six has to keep his knowledge, why he resigned, and other things that he knows, secret, because maybe that's what's keeping him alive. Or maybe he has other reasons that information is just too dangerous to give away. And the village and number two, and presumably number one, need to know everything. So why this one person resigned, presumably from being a spy, is incredibly important because they need to know all of these things.
Absolutely, yes. It's very clear in The Prisoner that, as you say, the knowledge is power. The knowledge inside number six head appears to be very powerful.
And the knowledge that number two and people in the village have is very closely guarded. And you never find out who the warders may or may not be. You know, who are the prisoners and who are the warders? Where is the village? All of these different things are very mysterious, and part of it is that idea that they're guarding that knowledge.
Yep, closely guarded.
Yes. You also get these 1960s Cold War ideas, which we've had before. It comes up in a number of these different shows. And it's fairly subtle in The Prisoner in that it's never mentioned explicitly, but you have in that intro, "which side are you on?" And the response from number two is, "that would be telling." And there are a number of other things that come up in various episodes where you encounter someone who apparently is from the Eastern Bloc, and there may be some escape plan, but who are they escaping to? and things like that. Is he in the village to have his knowledge taken to be used by the other side, or is it to have his side test to see how much he knows? There are a whole bunch of elements related to that that are just below the surface. They're never quite explicitly there, but they're lots of little references to it.
It's all tremendous stuff, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, as we've said, there's so much stuff going on in The Prisoner, and we haven't really gone in too much to the mysteries of it all, because there is so much mysterious stuff about, you know, the identity of Number One, and as you say, who is actually running this village, and what do they know, where it is. It's quite mind-boggling when you start to think about it all.
And for us, there's a lot. We don't really know who Number Six is in a lot of ways. So even the main character is in some ways a mystery. There are a lot of layers to this, and that's what makes it an interesting show.
Yep. Now, we always like to talk about spin-offs and sequels and remakes when we cover these shows on British Invaders. We can't really talk about all the influences that The Prisoner has had, because this would be an even longer show than normal for us, because there's been so many. But we will talk about a few specifics from The Prisoner. In particular, there were a few novelizations which came out in the late 60s at around the time of the television show was originally broadcast. And I note that one of them, very interestingly, was actually written by a fairly famous and very interesting science fiction writer called Thomas M. Dish, I think I'm pronouncing that right, who I gather had a very sort of like individual approach to the novelization of The Prisoner, which I haven't read myself, but I know that Tony on our Facebook group has read it and made some interesting comments about it in the thread there.
Yes, that would be an interesting one to take a look at, for sure. There have been several documentaries about The Prisoner, some of them available on YouTube and some of them on the various DVD releases. There's been more than one. And they attempt to explain some of the mysteries. They talk about some of these production aspects. They talk about some of the influences and some of how they see some of the layers of what was going on and all the different meanings of things in The Prisoner.
And then there's also been comic book versions of The Prisoner. Particularly, DC Comics brought out a sequel which was called Shattered Visage, which was written by Dean Motta and illustrated by Mark Asquith. And I believe that came out at some point in the 1980s, the late 1980s, as a four-issue miniseries, which was set up as a sequel with another character finding their way to this strange island and meeting some recognisable characters who we would, I think, be quick to identify as Number Six himself and also the Leo McKern version of Number Two. So that's quite interesting. I have read that, although not recently, and it was certainly an interesting attempt to do a sequel.
Interesting. Is that still available?
Yes, I believe you can get that, because I think it has been collected in a trade paperback graphic novel now.
I will have to try to get a hold of that.
And then there's been other comic book mentions of it. Famously, in Marvel's Fantastic Four comic, they travelled to a village which bore a striking resemblance to the village from The Prisoner itself. And then Jack Kirby, the comic book artist and writer who helped create the Fantastic Four, had actually had plans to produce his own comic version of The Prisoner in the 70s. And you can find pages from that on the internet, although it was never published, never saw the light of day, unfortunately. But that would have been fantastic, a Jack Kirby version of The Prisoner.
That sounds like an interesting one. The Prisoner has been re-aired on TV many times. It's sort of a perennial thing. It's almost always been there, showing up at one time or another all over the place. Now there are plans for a remake. In fact, the remake has been shot and is planned for an airing in November 2009, very soon indeed. It was made by AMC, American Movie Classics, with ITV as a co-producer. So ITV is involved, even though it's, I think, mainly an American production. It's a 6-episode miniseries with Ian McKellen as Number Two. so they don't have the rotating number two, where number two is replaced with a new number two every time. And Jim Caviezel is playing number six. And as we say, that's coming very soon. It's a six-episode miniseries. And from the things that are available so far, there is a 9-minute trailer that is floating around online. It looks like they did keep a number of elements from the original version of The Prisoner there, which is good to see. It's set in a desert. It's not set on an island with this sort of colorful look to it. But it does include many of the original elements with how they do the numbers, and I believe the rover is there, and so on and so forth.
It looks fantastic. I mean, I'm very interested to see it, and I'll certainly be watching it. It's a shame they haven't gone to Wales to shoot it, unfortunately, but I guess we couldn't have that. I think it's slightly unusual that they've chosen not to rotate the number twos, but I think obviously once they'd got Ian McKellen, he was just too good an actor, really, for him to just put him in one episode. I think they had to use him then for all six, really.
And they're doing it as a six-episode miniseries. I believe it's meant to be one ongoing story. It's not an episodic thing in the same way.
Right. Okay, but I mean, we're looking forward to it. It'll be interesting to see it, especially having so recently watched the original.
Absolutely.
But now, music.
He can make even the act of putting on his dressing gown appear as a gesture of defiance.
There are methods we haven't used yet, of course.
I want him with a whole heart, body and soul.
Now, getting into some of our own thoughts about the highlights and the lowlights of The Prisoner, I think you already get the idea that both of us like this series. But, Eamon, what did you like in The Prisoner? What stands out?
Well, as you probably know, Brian, I've got this thing about title sequences and introductions and music. And again, The Prisoner has such a fantastic opening that just sets the story up. Got this great music, great visuals, and then, as you've said, this great voiceover, which tells you pretty much all you need to know about the setup of The Prisoner. And as you say, does it each time with a different number two, which also tells you something that you need to know. So those features are just great. And, the quotes from that, as you know, have entered sort of popular culture that people will say, I am not a number, I am a free man. And most people, even if they haven't sort of watched The Prisoner, will know what you're talking about.
Yes. I have to agree with you on that. I'm not as much of a title sequence fan as you are, Eamon. But this was a very good title sequence, and it's great imagery and did a great job of setting everything up.
What else, Brian? What other features stood out for you?
Well, I really like the interplay between number six and number two, whichever number two they have. There is a lot of sort of psychological battling and some detailed and really interesting types of things going on there. And that combined with this sort of surreal look and feel to it, where there are some very bizarre things going on and this unusual looking place with the bright colors and the surveillance and all these different things.
I mean, yes, you're quite right. It's at its best, really, in the battles between number six and number two. I think those are the absolute high points of the series, the psychological battles between the two of them. And then, as you say, some fantastic design elements to the look of the series, which are great as well. It just looks like nothing else at all that's been on television. It is very distinctive.
I think we also have some very good performances and acting in this. Patrick McGoohan as number six was very good and very distinctive. There is nothing quite like that performance by that actor as number six. It's just this very dynamic and unusual performance. And we get many different performances as different types of number two, different characters filling this job as number two. And they had a number of often somewhat older actors who were good classical actors and brought some really neat things to it.
Yeah, we get Eric Portman and Anton Rogers and Patrick Cargill, very sort of well-known, extremely impressive actors from British television in the 60s, cropping up as number two. And as you say, the variety of them and the performances, really great stuff, particularly when they are locked in psychological combat with number six.
I liked most of the number twos. In most cases, they were good actors, and they let the actors sort of take it in the direction that they wanted to, and had a story that was suited to that actor as number two. So they had some pretty radically different approaches, and that was part of what made it interesting.
Yeah. So what about the bits that don't work quite so well, Brian? Were there any of those for you?
Well, there were a few. There were a lot of episodes with number six attempting to escape, and some of them were good, but sometimes the escape attempts became a little bit repetitive, and you sort of had, you know, the same kind of thing happening. There were some cases where the escape attempts were really very good. There was an episode called Many Happy Returns where number six does actually escape, or appears to escape, and there is a very long sequence at the beginning of the episode with no dialogue, and that was very good. So sometimes those worked well, but sometimes the escape attempts were somewhat repetitive, especially in the order that I was watching them in, which was the 40th anniversary DVD set. Its order is good, but it tends to put the escape attempts several in a row in the first half of it.
Right. Okay.
And that was just a little bit weak.
A little bit, right. Do you think that the show does lose its way somewhat towards the end of the series?
Well, again, it depends on what order you're watching in.
Right.
At times, it does some things that are almost seeming like they're trying to be different and radical for the sake of it. And you get things like the Western episode. You know, there's a thing about 60s and 70s sci-fi series that they had to do a cowboy episode for some reason. And the one that The Prisoner did was better than most of the other ones I've seen. But in some ways, it was also a little bit excessive, a little bit redundant. It didn't need to be there. So there were a few points where it had a bit of that feel.
Yeah, there does seem to be, dare I say, a couple of filler episodes which are not as strong as some of the others. I mean, you've mentioned that Patrick McGoohan had his own seven episodes that he was particularly committed to because they were his original ideas. And you do get the impression, or I did, that there are perhaps one or two episodes where he's not quite so committed. And I think there's one episode where he's not in it at all because he was off shooting, Patrick McGoohan was off shooting a movie at the same time. And I think he was committed elsewhere.
Yes, that was the body swap episode. This was another thing that it seems every TV series has to do a body swap episode. And the one they did was not bad, but did have a bit of the feel of being filler. And McGoohan's performance in it was rather abbreviated because most was spent with someone else playing number six as they had this body swap thing going on. So there were a few things that sort of seemed to be filler episodes or were a little repetitive. But I think even those are entertaining and have some interesting things and are worth looking at. You know, even when it was in its weaker stuff, this was still a pretty strong series.
We should also mention the editing of the show, which is very impressive. I mean, it's quite dramatic, fast cuts, quite unlike anything else at the time, I think. And again, on our Facebook thread, there's been some interesting discussion, and I think Tony has pointed out the editing to us, which does stand out.
Yes, Tony and Robert had a very good little discussion on our Facebook group there that we just participated in a little bit. And they made some good points about, yes, the editing was impressive and the look was impressive. The editing they did was quite quick, and it gave it, certainly in some of the episodes, a faster-paced feel than you would usually expect in a series from that time. And this was part of the style of this sort of bizarre and somewhat paranoid show where things were very strange and unusual and had this sort of quick cutting and quick moving of things that that gave you something that was rather unusual at the time and is a little more common now.
So if you want to get hold of The Prisoner, if you're inspired to watch it, or if you're inspired to go back and revisit it, for such a popular and influential show, it has been fairly easy to get hold of for many years, I think, Brian.
Yes.
There's been a variety of releases in both in VHS and then in DVD. So here in Region 2, you can currently buy the complete set of DVDs on Amazon for about £30. Or you, if you've upgraded to Blu-ray, and I think this is the first time we've had a Blu-ray version of any of the British Invaders shows.
Of a classic series? I think it certainly is.
I think so. Certainly the first one I can recall. But there's a Blu-ray version of the complete set, which will set you back about £43 on Amazon. As Brian says, it does get rebroadcast on the television channels fairly often. It was fairly recently on ITV4. Although, interestingly, the BBC have also shown it a few years ago. And also, I think another first, you in the UK, you can watch The Prisoner, you can download the episodes off iTunes, which would cost you £25 to download the whole series, or you can sample individual episodes for, I think it's £1.89 an episode. And certainly I've watched some of the episodes on iTunes, which is the first time I've done that for British Invaders. Unfortunately, it's not on the rental site at the moment. It's not on Love Films, but is due to appear there fairly soon, I guess, to tie in with the Blu-ray release.
It is a pretty well-known series, so you may find it for rental in your local DVD rental store as well.
That's true, yes. And in Region 1?
In Region 1, it's also widely available. It's certainly on Amazon.com, runs for about $53. And at the moment, I think the Blu-ray version, which is being released very soon, is actually a little bit cheaper. It goes for about $50. It isn't on iTunes in the US or Canada, as far as I know, but it is available on Netflix. And at the moment, it is available to view for free on the AMC website. AMC is doing the new remake of The Prisoner. This is American Movie Classics. And you can view all 17 episodes of The Prisoner on their website. And that is available if you are in the US or in Canada, and that's free. You can watch them there. There have been a number of releases over time. The current one, and I think the best one, is the 40th anniversary DVD release. There was an earlier DVD release that may be floating around as well still, and it was even on Laserdisc at one time. But the 40th anniversary edition of The Prisoner is the one that you want to pick up if you want to go on DVD.
So, Brian, our recommendations. Is this going to be two thumbs up for The Prisoner?
Well, I don't think this will be a big surprise. I really like The Prisoner. It is a classic of British science fiction and of British spy fiction as well. It is also a classic reinvention of how spy television could be handled and how paranoia television could be handled. It's good stuff. I recommend it. Find a copy and watch it. It's worth looking at. There is a lot of information on Wikipedia, including a lot of people's ideas about what things mean and that kind of thing. I would say watch the episodes first, then look at what Wikipedia has to say and what the documentaries have to say and that kind of thing. It's worth looking at and thinking about and talking to people about, because it has all these layers to it. And it's really worth sinking your teeth into it.
It is. And there's a lot to talk about with The Prisoner. And to be honest, there's far more to talk about and discuss and theorize about than we've been able to cover. I think we've only just been able to give you a sort of brief taster of some of the elements of The Prisoner. It's a thumbs up from me as well. I like The Prisoner. I think it's very good. I suspect we are preaching to the choir and that many of our listeners also know it and are very familiar with it. But perhaps if you're new to British science fiction, if you're a recent convert because of the new Doctor Who or Torchwood, and you're looking to get into some of the back catalogue, as it were, then this would be one to check out. Particularly perhaps if you like the TV show Lost, you might like to see an earlier show that dealt with a mysterious island and strange and perhaps mutable truths. I think, as I've suggested, I prefer the earlier episodes in the series, and I do find that it does get a bit more confusing and loses its way somewhat towards the end.
Is that by the DVD order, Eamon?
Yes, I think so, by the DVD order, yes. Although, as you say, that is slightly confusing to follow. We haven't talked about the ending of the series, really, because obviously we don't want to give anything away, but I'd be in the slightly dissatisfied camp by the ending. But on the whole, I think it's a two thumbs up from us from British Invaders. We do like The Prisoner.
Yes, absolutely. Good stuff. I actually did like the ending. I know the final episode is very bizarre and doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's one that I find entertaining, and I like how it reflects the rest of the series. So I even appreciate that in its own very strange way. The second last episode, which leads into it, is also strange. It fits more into the feel of the whole series than the last episode does. And personally, I think the second last episode was actually my favorite of the series.
Very good.
So, in summary, The Prisoner was about a secret agent, presumably a secret agent, who resigned and was kidnapped and taken to a mysterious place on an island known only as the Village. And on this island, people only have numbers, no one uses names, and no one is allowed to leave. They are kept on the island by mysterious bubbles called rovers that will stop people and kill people if they try to leave. You have a number two who is the villain of the piece and is a different character in the position of number two in a battle of wits against number six, the prisoner himself, every time. And there are many layers to this. There are many themes of things like individuals compared to society and surveillance and knowledge is power and so on and so forth. And there are some very bizarre things in there, and it moves on to a concluding couple of episodes that are controversial and even more bizarre than the rest of the series.
Very good, Brian. Well done. So next time on British Invaders, we're going to be discussing some television adaptations of the stories of a writer called M.R. James, a very famous British writer of ghost stories. And in particular, we're going to be looking at three adaptations of his work, a show called Cast in the Runes, a show called Whistle and I'll Come to You, and another show called A Warning to the Curious. So interesting stuff with a ghostly theme to talk about next time.
Yes, we may even cover the odd other M.R. James thing in there as well. And that will be a nice shift from the very bizarre to more traditional ghost stories. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there.
And please come and join us on Facebook and join in the debate about what The Prisoner was all about.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada saying, be seeing you.
And it's be seeing you from Eamon in England.